What is up, basketball fans? Welcome to the NBA Outlet. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me, as always, Corey Waldron and first-time guest, Cam Wright. What's up, fellas? How we doing?
Doing pretty good. Yeah, I'm excited to be on here.
Cameron, welcome to the pod. Nick, always a pleasure. And we already got to talk your Brooklyn Nets, which is close to your heart. And today, this one's close to mine.
We are talking Pacers. Two Pacer fans on here. I'm just going to try away. But before we get started, quick reminder, you can check out the previous previews on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. But before we talk next season, let's look back at last year. Pacers 48-34, fifth in the East, swept in the first round by the Celtics. Obviously, the season didn't go as planned because of the Victor Oladipo injury. How would you summarize it all in one emoji?
Yeah, the one that came to mind was just the meh emoji, just the straight face, because we've seen this before. I mean, see if it sounds familiar. Our most improved player next season injures himself, and we get an earlier exit in the playoffs than what we hoped. And I mean, happened to Oladipo, happened to Paul George. And so it's just kind of, as they said in Shawshank, what Morgan Freeman, same shit, different day. So just kind of same old, same old.
I went with a happier route. So I went with like the fist to like the power emoji, like way to hang in there, way to be tough. Obviously this Pacers team, like you mentioned, Cameron, we lost our best player. We lost our most improved player, and this team easily could have fallen down in the conference. I know a lot of people were writing this team off the minute Oladipo got hurt, and this team was able to rally. This team was able to remain competitive. They were able to fight for almost home court advantage. They ended up getting the fifth seed, and they were just a tough team. Miles Turner took some strides. We'll talk about all that, but for me, it was the power, because this team, even through losing their best player, and having the Tyreke Evans, which turned out to be quite the saga behind scenes, and made it a good year, all things considered.
Yeah, I think considering what happened, that team able to, you know, maintain that fifth seed and still be competitive was impressive. I was even a little surprised myself. I just went with the basic bandage emoji here. You know, you got the guy with his head wrapped up, and you just think a lot of that season, it all kind of revolves around that Victor Oladipo injury and what could have happened. Happened maybe if he was healthy, and maybe how far the Pacers could have went. But talking positive, what's the biggest positive takeaway from last season?
So it's something that I've seen time and time again with the Pacers organization as a whole. They have the ability to bring out the best in players you will not expect. I mean, no one expected Oladipo to become a star. Bogdanovich, even though he's in Utah now, he really kind of took the helm. Turner took big strides, which is awesome. A lot of these guys who were playing more role player type, I guess, roles, they really stepped up when a lot of people were writing them off. And when I see a lot of players this season are kind of our new choirs, it makes me really hopeful to see the ability for the Pacers. They're like your favorite coach. They just bring out the best in you, even when you may not even think you can be something special.
Yeah, my biggest positive takeaway, I mean, I think Bogdanovich deserves some sort of mention in this category, even though he's not with the Pacers. Leading the Pacers in scoring, having a career year, shooting 49-42, and I think like 80 from the field, he was ridiculous. The guy became instant offense, really played with effort on the defensive end, so shout out to Bogdanovich. But I think the biggest positive takeaway is that your young guys, your young big is in Domantas Sabonis and Miles Turner. Both of them took strides. Sabonis becoming, at least last year, sixth man of the year candidate with his ability to rebound and score off the bench, especially in the pick and roll. And then, as you mentioned, Cameron, Miles Turner had 199 blocks last year, 2.7 per game, led the league in total blocks, obviously. Didn't win Defensive Player of the Year, didn't make any all-defensive teams, even though I think he should have made over Joel Embiid. Seeing Turner and Sabonis take those strides when you didn't have your best player, and knowing both those guys are still so young, that's the best positive takeaway.
Yeah, you guys nailed it. I went specifically with Miles Turner, the jump he made defensively, like you mentioned, Corey, becoming a Defensive Player of the Year candidate. Not only were the blocks impressive, but his perimeter defense and his ability to defend the pick and roll, which is so crucial in the NBA today. But on the negative side, what would be the biggest negative takeaway?
Yeah. So looking back at the individual game stats, Miles Turner, he has made great strides. He's a just defensive juggernaut. He needs to be more consistent as a scorer. He wasn't very consistent. He would have nights where he'd score 26 and then 23 the next night, and then the next game he'd have 5 or 6 points. And I know the Pacers, they don't see him as – he's not their number one scoring option. He probably won't be as we stand now, but he needs to be more consistent that we can bank on, okay, he's going to score probably this – this amount somewhere in that ballpark for the night. And, you know, if he really wants to be, I mean, and a lot of people, me included, think he really will take the big step this year, possibly even becoming an all-star. And, but if he wants to do that, he has to show that night in and night out, he can be as productive as we know he can be.
My biggest negative takeaway is the one and only Tyreke Evans.
Yeah.
It was a great year. I remember when we signed Tyreke Evans, I was really happy. I was in a good place. I was really starting to come around to the idea of, wow, we got this guy who can play point guard, shooting guard, small forward coming off the bench. He had this great year in Memphis, and then we didn't get shit. We got like the great value version. And obviously since then, Tyreke Evans has been suspended from the NBA for 2 years. Had a lot of off-the-court issues, was actually somewhat of a cancer to the locker room last year for the Pacers. And it's funny because you wouldn't expect the Pacers, with how they rallied after the Oladipo injury, to have had some internal turmoil from a player going on behind the scenes, but they did. Evans just wasn't there. He just made things difficult by being so distant at times and having his own issues. Of course, I do wish him well. I do hope that he gets his life back on track and that, you know, it isn't the drug issue is an isolated incident. This isn't a recurring thing for him. But Tyreke Evans, with the expectations he had coming into the year on that 1 year, like $10 or $12 million deal, and him just not really being a factor, you know, shooting 38% from the field, 35 from three, could only really play for like 20 minutes, couldn't finish around the rim. I know for like a long long part of the season, he was shooting like 43% around the rim. Like, he was just terrible at making layups. So for me, the biggest negative was just the failed signing of Tyreke Evans.
Yeah, that was a real struggle. And honestly, you almost kind of forget about it, especially going to the season. There was some hype. Maybe this could be a sixth man of the year candidate. You know, he could bring something to the team, relieve Oladipo a little bit with his playmaking. But it almost seemed like last year and the year before in Memphis was an outlier. And then you mentioned the issues. But I went with the easy one for negative takeaway, and that's just Oladipo going down. Like I mentioned earlier, you know, what could have been. The East did have its good teams, but still the Pacers looked really good. And we mentioned Bogdanovich improving. If they had a full group together, who knows what they could have done in the playoffs. But moving into next season, OTG Power Rankings via our staff have the Pacers coming in at number 11. Thoughts on this? Too high, too low, or fair?
I think that's pretty fair. Because Pacers are just hard to scale. Because, I mean, I personally go back and forth. I'm like, they could be a powerhouse, but then you remember that, you know, they still don't have Oladipo until somewhere around December, January is what the timetable looks like. So I think that's fair for now. I wouldn't bank too heavily on it because they could, I think, pretty easily slip to 15th or 16th as easily as they could slip to like 6th or 7th. It's just there's so many variables out right now, especially regarding the with Vic being out and how this squad with a lot of new faces, how they're able to kind of gel and rally up until that wintertime return.
I think this is fair. You know, I can see them being one or two spots higher or one or two spots lower. I don't think they're like 18th, which I think is what ESPN had them at. That is ridiculous, having them 18th. Even if the logic is, you know, Victor Oladipo is not there until January. If that's the logic, I can kind of see it. But even still, 18 is just disrespectful, I think, especially with the talent they brought in. You know, it is going to be a little bit of a learning curve trying to figure out how Brogdon, Warren, Lamb, those guys kind of fit in. But this is a top 15 team, I think, easily, and I think 11's fair.
Yeah, I think 11's fair. It's more so where they'll probably be at the end of the season. Going in, you know, like that first half stretch, like you mentioned, without Oladipo, they probably could be a couple spots lower. But by the time he hopefully gets healthy and they get all these new pieces to kind of gel together, they should be 11 and maybe a spot or two higher. But moving into the offseason, which, you know, you mentioned, Corey, was very big, they drafted Goga.
I mean, I, like most people, I didn't know much about him, and I mean, I was disappointed at first, because I was also really hoping, possibly, if Tyler Hero slipped down to the 18th pick, I would love to have picked him up, but then looking at it, we do need a big who can back up Sabonis and Turner, because we don't want them stretched very thin, and looking at his skill set, he's got a really high IQ, and he's got a really strong defensive understanding, and I think that's going to be really helpful, especially with, you know, defensive dominance in the paint. And yeah, we do have Turner, but if we can add to that someone who can come in and back he and Sabonis up, I think that's, you know, really special. I think he was a great pickup.
Yeah, Goga, for those who are trying to pinpoint who Goga is, when Zion Williamson had his, before the draft, like, press conference or whatever, media day, Goga was the guy right alongside Zion who had zero reporters asking him questions when Zion had about 50. A guy who, like you mentioned, Cameron, not a lot of people knew going into the draft. I can say that I wasn't very well-versed in who Goga was, but this is a big who is very similar to Miles Turner. He can rim protect. He can guard somewhat on the perimeter, not, you know, not greatly by any means, but he's a rim protector, and he can shoot. He can shoot from the perimeter. He can shoot from deep. He's crafty around the rim. He's 19. He's extremely young still. And like you mentioned, Cameron, too, I mean, this is the kind of young piece you add behind Miles Turner and Sabonis as a safety net. Can play some, and they think he's NBA ready, too, which is a plus. I think he can contribute right away this year as that, you know, third center on the roster, depending on, you know, because I think they're going to stagger the minutes for Miles Turner and Domantas Sabonis for the center position. But Goga is going to get a lot of run time. And then also Goga gives you the safety net in which if you have to decide between Sabonis and Turner this year or next year, Goga can maybe step up into a bigger role in the future is also what I think the thought process might be.
And he was a guy that went up draft boards a little bit around the time of the draft going in. I don't think he was necessarily expected to be a mid-first round pick, and there was even talk about him going in the lottery. So it seems like the Pacers got some nice talent here. Now moving on to free agency and trades, they brought in TJ Warren, Malcolm Brogdon, Jeremy Lamb, TJ McConnell, Justin Holiday, Dakar Simpson, Edmund Summers was converted from a two-way to a regular contract. Favorite move of the offseason?
I have to say my favorite move of the offseason, TJ Warren. I love Brogdon, and I love what he's been able to do in Milwaukee, but I was talking to, you know, fellow writer here at OTG, Khalil Abdullah, who, big Suns guy, and he told me around when that trade happened, he said, you are absolutely going to love Warren. And he, he's been playing great. The games the Pacers have been playing in India, Warren's been playing great, a lot of great offense, shooting really efficiently, which is what we expect of him. His defense has a bit of ways to go, but that the Pacers just gave up cash for him and essentially stole Warren from the Suns, which is great, especially in this time where we don't have Oladipo on the wing, and we would like to add some more spacing to the floor with Bogdanovich gone. And I think it's just, I think it's an incredibly smart and solid move.
I want to say I love TJ Warren. I've been high on Warren for the last couple of years and the scoring potential he has, but he's just been kind of wasting away in Phoenix. This guy has shown in those two India games you mentioned, Cameron, that he can really ball out. You know, two 30-point performances, can hit the three. Last year wasn't a fluke. This guy has a three-point shot to his game. And I'm really excited for the offensive abilities that he's going to be able to contribute. Can play the small ball for the defense. I'm not so worried about. I mean, Bogdanović was a terrible defender, or not a terrible defender, but was not a good defender when he came to the Pacers. But you put a guy in a system where everyone is trying, and just a good defensive scheme in general, then you get the best out of players. T.J. Warren's also playing for a winner. I think that elevates his game. So the Warren signing I love, but my favorite has got to be Malcolm Brogdon.
Yeah.
This is my guy, especially when the month or two leading up to free agency, it was all Ricky Rubio, Ricky Rubio. And I was thinking in my head, like, no, we need floor spacing. We need defenders. We don't need a guy who can't shoot. And I remember being on the pod with Nick, Jay, and Jack, and when the Brogdon news came through, that video was timeless for me, like, reacting live, because I was as happy as I've been in a long time.
Right.
Brogdon can defend. He's shown that he can be a point guard. I know there's a lot of concern, more so from Bucks fans and people telling me that he can't be a point guard and run an offense. From the two games I saw in India, it looks like he can run an offense. And granted, when Victor Oladipo comes back, it won't solely be on Brogdon. That ball handling duty will be split between Brogdon and Oladipo. So the fact that Brogdon can play defense, the fact that he's, an underrated playmaker at this point in time to the general NBA, and the fact that we know, you know, he had the 50-40-90 club, last year or the year before. A guy who can score, a guy who can shoot from the perimeter. I absolutely love Brogdon. The only concern I have with Brogdon is his health. Other than that, I think that is going to be the best signing hands down because of the defensive capabilities of him and Oladipo.
Right. And I think it's a smart move to make because it's more so when Oladipo's back. Like, I think he is a playmaker. He's capable, but he's best as your secondary ball handler. And then having Oladipo there, he's just a great complementary piece because he can play on ball, off ball, and like you mentioned, he can defend. And it was, you know, a good signing for the Pacers. Like, they don't necessarily sign a ton of big names, and Brogdon was one of the bigger names in the market, and to land him for a nice contract was really good, especially with the restricted free agency. Not a lot of people expect him to leave Milwaukee. But I also say I think an underrated signing that really hasn't been mentioned, which I think is a solid scorer, is Jeremy Lamb. You know,
yeah.
A guy to have on the team that can go get you buckets. He's not anything amazing, but you know what you're getting with Jeremy Lamb.
No, Jeremy Lamb's a great guy to throw in there. Obviously, he's gotten better every year in the league, too. And not relatively old, not young. Going into the prime of his career, he's going to be 27 this year. Averaged a career best 15 points per game last year. Shot 44, 34, and 88. You like those numbers. He was one of the bright spots in Charlotte alongside Kemba Walker. Had a couple big shots for them, especially last year down the stretch. You know, the half-court game winner against Toronto sticks out. I know that's a little bit of a fluke game winner. But I'm excited about Jeremy Lamb, especially early on, because as you mentioned, or as we've been mentioning, with Oladipo not coming back till later 2019, early 2020, Jeremy Lamb will have a very big role on this team and in this starting lineup, most likely going forward.
Right.
And he can get buckets, and that's what you're going to need with Oladipo out.
Correct.
Yeah.
Now, departures. We got Bogdanović, Corey Joseph, Darren Collison, Thaddeus Young, Tyreke Evans, Wesley Matthews, Kylo Quinn. Out of these guys, who do you wish they were able to keep? You got only pick one.
Yeah. At least, I mean, we did get Brogdon, but I still would have loved to have kept Collison because, and he left. That shocked everyone. I mean, God bless him. He's finding, you know, his own mental peace, and that's great. But he's a great true point guard, very efficient shooter. I think last two seasons he had one of the highest 3-point percentages, and with a lot of these young core members, something that can really help them kind of take the ease off on offense and is a competent ball handler and someone who really knows and can run the floor. And I'm not saying Brogdon can't do that, but Collison, I mean, that was what he was. And I think that losing him is just, it's tough.
Yeah, Collison's a good choice. Definitely going to miss him. I mean, obviously, he spent the last couple of years with the Pacers, and like you mentioned, shot 46.8%, not last year, but the year before, which led the entire NBA in three-point shooting. The guy I'm going to miss most, though, is Thaddeus Young.
Yeah.
He's just a bull. The guy was an animal for us. The guy was a hustler. The guy did all the little things that don't really stand out on the stat sheet. He had gotten better at the three-point line. Wasn't a knockdown three-point shooter by any means, but he had definitely gotten better in that department. Arguably, I think if that three-point shot got to, and he shot 34% last year. That got to like 37%. I don't even think they let him walk. But Thaddeus Young was so good. The captain of our team last year. I'm going to miss Young, not only for what he did in the locker room, but just I think having that kind of presence on the court, or just having a guy like that, whether he was going to be starting on a team like this or coming off the bench, you know, a guy who plays with that much heart and does all the little things, I think those guys are crucial to teams.
Right. If I can, yeah. If I can chime in real quick about Thaddeus, I mean, looking at the roster this year, we don't have really any older veterans of players who are in their mid-40s or so, unless I'm missing anyone. And Thaddeus was just this presence of this mentor and still a solid output player, can really help these young kids develop. And I think having a veteran on this team, especially this year, kind of new squad, everyone's still fairly young, I think that would be huge.
Definitely. I think you look at Collison, you mentioned being so efficient and consistent for the Pacers the last two seasons. Then Thad Young, you know, obviously being a Nets fan, I think everybody or every team that has played for, the fans just love him because of the heart and the energy he brings in the court. And he's just a professional, and that's what you want on your team. I'm going to go with Bogdanović here, though. I think his fit in the current NBA, that forward position, somebody can shoot, get you offense. If they had him with this team, they'd probably be another level offensively. But moving forward to next season with the entire team, what would be the biggest X factor not being health and not being a specific player?
Yeah, I think the biggest X factor is just this new group being able to gel. Because, I mean, we lost a lot of players and we added back a lot of players. And it's a very different team. And the ability for them to gel, especially with not having an older veteran, which is huge for young teams for chemistry. I still think they can do it, but it's a necessity if they want to move forward and kind of get out of this Groundhog Day of third, fourth, fifth spot in the East.
Have we considered progression as a scapegoat answer for that? Can I not say progression?
You cannot say. You could say whatever you like.
Well, no, like, is progression a good answer? Like, is that allowed? Technically, it touches, like, on players?
Or is that no, like... you can touch on it, because overall, you're looking for the team to progress, not right, okay. One specific guy.
I just wanted to make sure, because for me, the X factor is progression. Because, as we mentioned, with Bogdanović leaving, Collison leaving, Thaddeus Young leaving, you know, even to the degree that Kyle O'Quinn's gone, Wesley Matthews are gone, Corey Joseph is gone, a lot of our veterans are gone. And now the progression of not only the young players on the court, but off the court. You know, Miles Turner has mentioned that FIBA was a good way for him to learn how to be a leader. Victor Oladipo has already spoke about how he needs to be a better leader. So I think the progression of players, not only on the court, which obviously Sabonis, Turner, Oladipo, and, you know, the boatload of young guys, Holiday, Johnson, how these guys develop is crucial to what we see on the court, but also these guys off the court and who's going to become the next leader of the locker room, the guys who are going to continue to push what the culture that has been established when these guys were rookies forward for the Indiana Pacers.
Yeah, that's a really good one. I think culture is a really underrated thing in the NBA, and the Pacers have a very good one. I went with just creating offense for others. You know, losing Collison, losing Joseph, and then Oladipo being out. I think early in the season, it's going to be on Brogdon. It's going to be who else can make life easier for your teammates, and then also who's going to be that bucket getter, you know, 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter until Oladipo comes back.
That will be a real concern early on. I'm not going to lie to you. I'd be lying if I said playmaking and getting the ball to the right guys in the right spots is going to be an issue, because outside of Brogdon, like, Aaron Holiday might be like the second best playmaker on the team, and I'm not sure how I feel about that.
And I feel like, at least from what I've seen from Aaron Holiday, I feel like his scoring is ahead of his playmaking, at least from far in the NBA.
I would agree.
So, I mean, it's going to be...
Does that mean we're going to see more TJ McConnell? Because, like, I like what TJ McConnell brings, but at the same time, that's just no spacing when he's out on the floor. But I think McConnell will probably get a boost in minutes, at least until Oladipo comes back.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting. Now, who do we have starting on opening night? I know you mentioned Nate McMillan already announced the starting lineup, right?
He did. The starting lineup for the Indiana Pacers will be Malcolm Brogdon, Jeremy Lamb, TJ Warren, Domantas Sabonis, Miles Turner. That will be the Pacers starting five opening night.
Now, I've got another question for you. What will the Pacers starting lineup be post All-Star break?
Go ahead, Cameron, you can hit this.
Oh yeah. So post All-Star break, we so that would be expecting Oladipo's back by then. So yeah, keep Brogdon at the point guard, Oladipo at shooting guard. Warren would still be at the three, Sabonis at the four, and Turner at the five. So nothing really changes except for putting Oladipo in for Lamb. And like the starting lineup, I mean, we pretty much expected what this lineup's gonna look like on opening night. So yeah, I think just adding back in Oladipo, because also, I mean, Indiana's got great athletic trainers, so he'll be back and be able to be in the starting lineup, hopefully right as soon as December or January comes around. So yeah, that's what I think the lineup looks like post All-Star break.
Yeah, I think that's also the same five I would go with post All-Star break. I do, like, a part of me wants to go like hot taking and be like, well, Sabonis and Turner won't be playing at the same point in time then.
Anyway. That's why I asked the question.
but I don't want to think that, because if they're not playing together, that's not good. That means things are not going according to plan. But I'll play the hypothetical. Because I think ideally, actually, I'll give you this, Nick. This is what I think the best starting five is for the Pacers. I think the best starting five is Malcolm Brogdon, Victor Oladipo, Jeremy Lamb, TJ Warren, Miles Turner. I think that's the best starting five if you want to have rim protection with a lot of offensive scoring. I think that would be the best starting five.
And it could probably be likely their closing lineup. I think that's a real possibility. It'll be interesting to see what happens with that whole Sabonis and Turner thing. We haven't really talked about it a ton, but that's going to be kind of defining for the Pacers season, at least early on. If they can get those two to be really effective, you know, like we've kind of talked about off air, there's not necessarily a ton of teams that play two bigs.
Yeah, and well, and a big thing to keep in mind is Sabonis right now, I believe he's a free agent end of this season. Restricted.
Contract but, year.
Right. So, well, also, you know, if things aren't working out, who knows if maybe we start to hear his names around the trade deadline because they don't want to pay him. They don't want to lose him for nothing.
Right. And yeah. I think – oh, wait, I'm sorry to interrupt. But I just want to go to Sabonis real quick. I – at least from IC, I think – I would foresee him sticking in Indiana. I mean, he's really thrived here, and he's kind of not talked about as much as I think he should be, because he's really been really competent and held his own, and he was pretty much an afterthought in that Paul George Oladipo trade a couple seasons back, and, you know, it's he's really grown to his own, and, you know, I think he gels really well, and yeah, having Turner and Sabonis on the court at the same time, it's worked really well. It's pretty unconventional now with more positionless offense or more positionless basketball. And but yeah, that's I really like what I'm seeing from Sabonis, and I really hope the Pacers, you know, keep him around.
Now, talking players, who's the guy to watch next season?
I put down Miles Turner. Because I said, and I touched on this earlier, a lot of people expect him to be an All-Star this year, and he just needs to take that one last step, especially while Oladipo's gone. This team, if he makes that step, this team is his team until Oladipo comes back, and he needs to understand that he has the ability to score. He needs to be more consistent with that. He is a defensive juggernaut, and he needs to know that a lot of this now rests on my shoulders, and he kind of needs to take the reins as of now. And I think that could really make or break the Pacers being this kind of lukewarm third, fourth, fifth seed team into being maybe not a title contender, but maybe throw their hat in the ring.
Yeah, for me, the same guy to watch is Miles Turner. This is my I put a lot of eggs in this basket so far going into this season. I think Miles Turner will win Defensive Player of the Year. I think there's a chance he even wins Most Improved Player of the Year. I think this is the year we finally see the offense to come along. We've seen flashes of it in workout videos, in open gym runs, and even a little bit in FIBA. Obviously, it wasn't great, and he got matched up with Rudy Gobert. I'm not going to go into detail on that. We all know what happened. Someone got sunned, and he's on the Pacers. but I think it's Miles Turner. I think this is the guy you want to watch, because you see the defensive skill he has, as Nick mentioned. An underrated perimeter defender for a center. A guy who can defend the rim with, like, the best of them. It's just the offense. And, I mean, rebounding to a degree, too. You know, only averaged 7 per game last year. When he matches up with guys who are a little bit more physical down low, Turner tends to struggle. But that's the hope, that if you start Turner and Sabonis side by side, Sabonis is going to be the guy doing all the glass rebounding. That's going to be Sabonis. Turner's going to be more of a free floater on offense and a rim protector on defense. Not sure how that looks to a large degree yet. We don't have a giant sample size. But I think Turner offensively is what you're looking for. A guy who shot 48 and 38 and 73 last year from the field. The numbers are good. If he's going to shoot 48% from the field and 38% from three, I'm okay with that. It just needs to be a volume. A guy only had 20% usage rate last year in a regular season. It dropped down to 15% in the playoffs, which is a big reason why I think they struggled in that matchup against the Celtics, is they stopped using Turner as much offensively. Granted, he had Al Horford on him. That's a different animal to try and go up against, especially in the playoffs. But for me, it's Turner. If he's going to have the shots available for him early on in the season, there's going to be every opportunity for him to show that he could be the number two option or number three option for this team going forward. And I just want to see Miles Turner get the green light to shoot threes, the green light to do pick and pops. Because early on in his career, the pump fakes out of wide open mid-range shots were annoying, to say the least. So seeing him just become more confident in his jump shot and getting more aggressive, but also having the backing from Nate McMillan to take those kind of shots would be my hope. And I think Turner's the guy you want to watch.
Yeah, both, you know, great pick, obviously, with Turner, because that's a guy that needs to take that jump if the Pacers ever want to be contenders. They need him to be that second or third option on a championship-level team. I think you go with him. We kind of mentioned Sabonis being a contract year, and you could honestly go with any of the new additions and how they're going to fit, even like a Malcolm Brogdon. You know, how's he going to do in a bigger role? Obviously, he's not playing with Giannis. He's going to have more responsibility to score and make his teammates better. But talking as a team as a whole.
I just want to say one more sleeper for a guy to watch. I mean, Victor Oladipo.
Yeah.
I mean, we do not know what Victor Oladipo is going to be when he gets back. I mean, I know that we're all just, you know, he's going to be back and we're all assuming he's going to be fine. He's going to be Victor Oladipo. There is going to be a transitional period from him getting into game shape. I know that he's in shape. I know he's training, but there is still something different by rehabbing and then getting on the court in the NBA game. We've seen it with Paul George, Gordon Hayward. It just takes a little bit. And also the injury that Victor Oladipo suffered being a quad tear. We've only seen like one or two cases in the NBA where a player has suffered this injury. It's not a very common injury. Tony Parker was the biggest name to have suffered this injury, and his career was already near the backstage, so who knows how much it took off of his game. But it's definitely something to be mindful of while Victor Oladipo rehabs and then finally gets back on the court.
No, that's a great point, because I think it's just – really tough to gauge, because not only is it the actual physical injury, it's also the mental hurdle of kind of feeling confident on that leg and then going up against NBA competition. You know, practice is practice until you're going on the real thing. It's going to make a difference. But what's worst case scenario for this Pacers team next year?
Yeah, so worst case scenario, so like we talked about, if Turner doesn't develop, if he doesn't take that next step into becoming an all-star or becoming the number two option, and maybe he doesn't even have to regress for this to be. If he kind of stalemates, I think that that's kind of yellow flag. Oladipo, like, we don't know much about this quad tear, but worst case scenario, if it, you know, takes him some time to kind of get back in the swing of things, maybe the timetable, maybe instead of returning, returning in December, January, it's more like February or March, and this new squad, if they just aren't able to gel, you know, I would see, if all those things kind of happen, I think the Pacers, they'd be hovering somewhere around like 30-35 wins, because it'd just be a real uphill battle against the elements.
Yeah, I think the Pacers also have a really tough second half schedule, if I recall. So I think worst case scenario would be Turner Sabonis doesn't work. Victor Oladipo isn't as healthy as we're hoping he's going to be. And chemistry takes a little bit longer than usual to gel. And this team, I don't think they missed the playoffs in the East, but they finished as like a 7 or an 8 seed.
Yeah, I think worst case scenario is pretty much what you guys mentioned, and they're right on the cusp of missing the playoffs, but I think they probably still get in because of what we saw last year gives you enough confidence, even if they did deal with issues or Oladipo's not back, and it is the Eastern Conference. But what's best case scenario?
Yeah, so best case scenario, and I mean, it's, call it cliche because it's Indiana, but essentially Hoosiers. If you remember in the movie Hoosiers, Gene Hackman goes into the barbershop with all the men in the town to talk about the team. And one of the guys says, we went 15-10 last year and we got our, so we don't like change. We went 15-10 last year. We got our whole squad back except for one. And it kind of can apply with the Oladipo thing, but if it did follow like a Hoosiers kind of timeline, this team would kind of, with a new identity, move forward. Oladipo would come back and just thrive. Turner really grows as a player and goes from a solid starting big with a unique skill set to an all-star. And this new squad just really, you know, meshes well, and there's no drama, and they're just able to flow seamlessly. I really think the squad could do a lot of damage, and I think that would put them probably around 55 wins if they hit the mark with all these factors.
Oh, shit. That's the best case if I've ever heard one. I'm excited by that best case. I think best case scenario, though, is 3 seed. I'll say 2 seed. Something goes weird, but then between the Bucks and the Sixers, somehow the Pacers get a 2 seed. They're 10 games over 500 when they get Oladipo back. Oladipo hits the court. This team flies. Turner, Sabonis are thriving. We're zagging, and the league's zigging, and we don't give a damn, and it's all working out. And they end up somehow getting into the Eastern Conference Finals. I think that's best case scenario.
Yeah, that's what I got too. I think 3rd seed and best case scenario was squeeze into the Eastern Conference Finals and get knocked out there. But what's your actual prediction for the season, and where do they finish in the division?
Yeah, so my actual prediction, somewhere in the middle. I had them hovering around 45 wins and 2nd in the Central Division, just behind the Bucks, because Central Division, not super strong. I mean, they have the Bucks and the Pacers, and, you know, Pistons have a lot of question marks around them. But, but back to a couple months ago, my hot take was Pacers make the Eastern Conference Finals. And I think I still stand on that. And that is some best case scenario has to happen. But I do think it's very feasible.
So my actual prediction, the Indiana Pacers finish 2nd in the Central Division behind the Bucks. The Pacers also finish with a whopping, they finish with 48 wins. And it's just a good year. The Pacers withstand the test of time without Victor Oladipo. The guys take strides. Victor Oladipo comes back. They make the playoffs. They get through the first round, which has been our biggest issue the last couple of years. And then we match up with one of those two juggernauts in the 2nd round, and that's the end of the season.
I'm pretty similar to you. I have 47 wins. I think the first round matchup will probably just depend on who they're matching up with and more so about how good that other team is playing. But there's a good chance they can get in the 2nd round, but I also could see them get knocked out in the 1st round. But guys, I did have one more question for you before we get the league pass. How would you rank the top 5 players in the Pacers, not including Oladipo?
Top 5 players without Oladipo, I would put – it's tough right now, but where it stands, I think I'm going to put Brogdon over Turner because he's just shown to be more consistent. And I can count on more. Turner could absolutely blow me away. So I think I'll have it go Brogdon, Turner, probably right now for me, I think Warren, Sabonis, then Lamb.
So my 5 would be Brogdon, Turner, Sabonis, Warren, Lamb would be my 5. I'll give Sabonis and Turner the edge, but I could easily see Lamb being like the 2nd best guy on this team.
Interesting. Obviously, we'll see what happens during the season. But getting onto League Pass, How would you rate the Pacers 1 through 10? Obviously, you guys are big fans, so you're going to give them a 10. But for the public, how would you rate them?
Yeah, I'd probably give it – I mean, they're probably like a 6.5 or 7 because, I mean, they're the epitome of Indiana basketball, which Corey and I love. But to the masses, it's a very fundamentally sound game that's not super flashy. And I don't know, it's – especially with Oladipo gone for the first portion of the year. Man, a lot of these very solid players, but not – people who are popping up in every basketball discussion, I just don't see them being as – I don't see them being not exciting, but they're obviously not as exciting as a team like the Bucks or like the Celtics.
I mean, obviously for me it definitely would be a 10, and it is a 10. If you're an outsider looking at the Pacers, it's probably somewhere – it's probably like a 6, 6.5. I do think that – when Oladipo comes back, and if this team hits the identity they want to hit, which is a lot of pushing the tempo, getting up and down the floor, shooting more threes, scoring a lot, while still retaining a good defensive-minded scheme, I think this Pacers team can be funner to watch in years past. But I'm realistic. I think it's probably around a 6. But give the Pacers a chance. That could be fun.
Yeah, I went with a 7 here. You know, like you guys said, it's more so when Oladipo comes back where things will really start to pick up. But there's some pieces that'll get you some interest, and the Pacers are a competitive team, so it's not like you're going to necessarily see them blown out, and they're not super talented where they're going to blow out a ton of teams. So it seems like there'll be a lot of close games for Indiana. What TV show would you compare to the Pacers? Now, this can be based off of watchability or plot.
Yeah, so one came to mind was Peaky Blinders. A show I absolutely love. It's about a 1920s British street gang, and it really resonated, the plot, because it's this gang that has all these larger gangs around them in, you know, 1920s England, and they have to make the right moves and the right heists, and where, and they have to they have certain people within their hierarchy that they want to develop. And they know that if they hit the mark on each one of these things, they can be a force to be reckoned with. And I think that's exactly kind of the situation the Pacers are in right now. Because they, if you look out, they've got the Bucks in their division. They have the Sixers. The Celtics have, you know, gotten, still got a competitive roster. And, you know, a lot of people are counting out the Pacers, partially on behalf of, they don't have Oladipo for the first portion of the season, but they just don't have a ton of stars. But I think, yeah, if they can hit the mark on all these little factors of can they gel, can Turner be more consistent with his jump shot, can TJ Warren become a more solid defender, can Brogdon be a more competent ball handler, then they could be maybe not the team to beat, but a very intimidating opponent.
So for me, I have my favorite show of all time, The Sopranos.
Ooh.
Another mobster. I respect your taste in Peaky Blinders because I like mobster genre movies,
yeah,
and TV shows. But Sopranos is hands down my favorite TV show of all time. I think I've watched it 5 times through, maybe even more. And this team is going to be really fun, and it's my favorite thing to do aside from watch The Sopranos.
So I went with Daredevil here, and I went with the last season of Daredevil where he's like missing for a portion of the season where people don't know that he's alive, and then he's slowly coming back, and then by the end he's back to normal and kicking ass. That's going to be Oladipo this year for the Pacers, hopefully. So there's my connection, and watchability, it's pretty similar too. But anything else you guys want to touch on before we get out of here?
No, I just, I want to give some mention to, Nate McMillan. He did some good work, back in Seattle back about, 10, 15 years ago, kept him around 500 with a not great roster, but I was really happy with last year when Oladipo went down and everyone was just kind of looking around what we should do. He just kind of coolly and calmly collected himself and said, here's what we need to do. Don't panic. If everyone can just push a little harder we're not out of this. And I'm extremely happy. For majority of the season, he was my coach of the year. But, I mean, Nick Nurse is, I mean, he did great work with the Raptors, and that's something you can't shy away from. But I'm so happy McMillan is, you know, taking the helm. And I think he's a great problem solver. He's great at kind of conquering these challenges of when people are like, what should we do? And, you know, it's great to have him at the helm.
Yeah, I'll touch on that. I just want to touch on Nate McMillan, too. We probably should have gave him a little bit more run time, because what he did with the Pacers last year was a good feat. And I think the fact of the matter is, even though there are a lot of Pacers Twitter that conflict on how they feel about McMillan, because McMillan does run a sort of out-of-date offensive style. And obviously, him pushing forward with the two big men lineup and zagging has some people concerned. But defensively, it's a very smart, defensive-minded head coach. The offensive scheme needs to integrate more three-point shooting, but we have more three-point shooters, which should help that. And then the simple fact of the matter is, you know, the players love him. The team genuinely loves playing for him. You know, Paul George has spoke very highly of Nate McMillan even since leaving the Pacers. So McMillan's been a crucial part of all of this, and he's already lasted longer than Larry Bird's quote-unquote expiration date for head coaches, which is 3 years. McMillan's going to be entering, I think, year four or year five.
So, yeah, obviously, McMillan did a great job last year with the Pacers. Be interesting what he does with all these new pieces. But, guys, been a pleasure talking to Cam. Corey, give yourself a shout-out.
All right, yeah, Cameron Wright. On Twitter, my handle is CameronLeft_. I cover Southwest Division with Off the Glass, and be sure to, you know, keep a lookout.
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at KWAL Hoops, KWAL Hoops, and you can also check out the Full Access Hoops podcast, another OTG basketball podcast in which I host.
And you can follow Off the Glass on Twitter at OTG Basketball. Head to the website, otgbasketball.com. Like Corey mentioned, we got a ton of podcasts, ton of great content, team previews left and right, and other different series. And as always, you can check out the previous episodes of the NBA Outlet on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, Dash Radio, YouTube, and obviously otgbasketball.com.
Peace out, knuckleheads.